Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SLP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just remind how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444 to follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702 or SLP On Call or Starfleet Universe On Call. But if you want the best online spirits, where you want to go to, you want to go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you'll find that to be able to join the chat room. You'll be able to watch my wonderful face. And you will join us, which is always the best thing most of all. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to, you can follow me on the Twitters. That's SFU on call also. And my personal account is also Paul France, P-A-U-L-F-R-N-Z. Yes, I still have an account. And also my business account, which is France Games, F-R-A-N-Z-G-A-M-A-S, no T in that. Also, if you want me to follow me on Blue Sky, I am on Blue Sky, and I'm currently I'm following it, like New York Times and things like that. So it's actually kind of interesting. Got some base Orioles there too. So I'm pretty happy with the feed. I check it every once in a while. I'm not constantly doom scrolling. But anyway, if you want to follow me there, go to francegames.com. That's my personal and business account. I'll probably just keep them together in that case. Also, I have a one for the podcasting account, which is sfuoncall@bsky.social. And hopefully that will be changing to sfuoncall.com, because I just need to do some quick DNS stuff and then verify that, and then everything will be cool. But moving onward and forward with this lovely talk cast, gets into the podcast available on iTunes and various other things around the net. Not much going on with ADB this week, you know, other than the little thing, if you listened last week's, we had to talk about non-aggression, and there was a decision, and also some discussion. Anyhow, but found on online store for this week is the last of the Starfleet Times issues, and that's issues 46 through 50. 46, okay, and that's only $7.95 for the package of five, you know, for the five issues. And on issue number 46, you have the preview of the Pinwheel Galaxy, including two Empires and four SSDs. So if you want some playtest material, hey, that's a good one to get. And number 47 has the Gorn Police Frigate Variants, and there's 10 SSDs, including a Battle Frigate and Variants, and the Frignaut Police Leader, which is interesting. The Frignaut, as overall, is one of those crazy ships. So, again, one of my favorite ships of all time was the B-10T battle, you know, tug, which was kind of cool. I always liked it. And number 48 is the preview of the Magellan Cloud, including one Empire and two SSDs. Obviously, there's a whole module out for that already. But if you want to, you can still get that. Also, the Mega Tournament cheat sheet, weapons tables, minimum rules for the 11 Omega Tournament ships presented in the Starfleet Times number 45, which is nice. But of course, as I mentioned last week, that Omega ships, Tournament ships, have been modified, not quite officially, but as we've been going on when it comes to SLP Online, we've modified them, and that's where I've been doing all the playtesting for the Omega Tournament ships. And number 50 was the second preview of the Magellan Cloud, including two Empires and three SSDs. So, again, it's only $7.95. Sounds like some pretty cool stuff. I like the one I'd be interested in is the Pinwheel Galaxy one myself. That sounds like a really, really good one. The Gorn Police Frigate Variants is kind of cool, and the Frignaut Police Leader, I wonder what the difference is between the Frignaut and the Frignaut. The Frignaut, for those of you, is the Klingon F6. It's kind of it's crazy. Moving onwards and forward to the SMLN tournaments, Jack played Jude and he lost. Jack Taylor was playing in place of Stephen McCann in the WAX. Unfortunately, he really didn't know how to play it properly, so he got trounced in four turns. Well, my part is I found out that they were playing. I went to watch them. It was over by the time I got there. So yeah. So that should be interesting. I've moving on with forward with online client stuff, not much happening there. I know I still got work on the Windows stuff with my daughter. Also going on to the library port this week. Nothing happened in either SFB or the FedCom libraries. Been very quiet. What I'm hoping to see is something from Matthew Potter on some updates for the general units to fix those refits, which would be, oh, I would be so happy. It would bring joy to my heart to have that completed. I want to take it over just because I was frustrated, but if he can do it, because he probably has more time than I have, and it can be completed and done right, I will be eternally grateful, eternally happy when it comes to that. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, it's the only old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Star from the Universe on call. And tonight we have Jeff. Say hi, Jeff.
Hey, everybody.
And we have Doug. He's back for some reason.
Yeah, I.
Hi. Don't mind me. I am. Ta-da. I hate this. They changed the interface of the Twitch client, and it's driving me crazy. Just a little bit.
A short drive, at least.
Yes, it's definitely a short drive. Thank you very much.
Well, the problem is it's not so much as a short drive is that your sanity goes into Stack Overflow.
Have you actually been on Stack Overflow?
Yes, I have. I rest my case.
Yes. Okay. Oh, there it is. There it is. I had to click on my profile. I said I'm getting used. It's a new interface. They changed it on me, so I got figured out. It has, although it does have some features for like moderation and that kind of thing, and which is fine if I wasn't doing it at the same time. Makes it, and fortunately, to be honest, I am small enough that I normally don't have problems with moderation. Every once in a while I get someone stop by, and it's usually a spammer. And it's like, okay, whatever. And again, since usually it's a relatively small group, under 10 people, it doesn't get that much attention by the spammers and scammers and low life scum. How about low life scum? Jeff, you had a topic for this evening? Something other than
I
what the
was thinking
pre-show?
maybe we could talk about something that we don't seem to talk about that much on this channel. Starfleet battles outside of the tournament. In specifics,
How do we
what's
do
one thing
that?
that
Isn't it a
what's
tournament
one
only they have
aspect?
left?
Okay,
I'm kidding.
remember
I'm
talking
truly
about it when
kidding.
I'm around.
I'm truly kidding because Lord knows with Frank LeMay and Matthew Potter have been running a tournament. Not a tournament. Been running a campaign for multiple years now. Somewhere, I think around 4 or 5 years. I forget. exact amount, but that's, I think I'm pretty sure it's been since 2020 that they've been running this campaign. And that's one of the reasons why I've been getting a lot of updates from Frank and from Matthew Potter, that they've been, so to make sure that those ships either exist, because sometimes the ships or fighters don't exist. In other cases, the ships have errors in them. And so they run, into issues. And that's why one of the things that, as I talked about 2 weeks ago, which you weren't here for, which was the whole issue, because actually Neon came on, which is Matthew Potter. He actually was on the Discord. He joined us via Discord. Which you can do, just to let you know, guys. I do, on my Discord server, you know, on the Franz Games SFB game server. If you, I actually, you know, have the channel and so forth for SFB Online. Also, there's a channel for Starfleet Warlord if you want to talk about Starfleet Warlord. But also, I do a stream there on, it's called SFU On Call. There's, and I, anyone can listen and talk on that channel. And I use that for the broadcast each week. So if you want to join us that way, feel free. But he was on, and we came up, one of the part of the discussions that came up was the general units and some of the issues. And I described to him what the problem that we had was with that. And from that actually came a video, which I put out there. I'm surprised how many people actually watched it. I was shocked. I think it's been over 100 people now, 100 views. And it's like, why are people listening? I have a hard time understanding why, other than a few individuals that are actually working on the ship definitions, actually would watch the video. But they watched the video. It's like, okay. I understand. It's kind of if you want to look at the behind the scenes kind of thing of how the sausage is made to a certain degree, you might be interested in it.
The thing is, see how many watched it the whole way through.
That's true. I have not actually looked at the stats.
Yeah, they may come in off keyword searches, topics, and stuff. Mm-hmm. Listen for a few minutes and then left.
Right.
Or they may have listened to the whole thing. You never know.
Right. Oh, I know there's at least two that listened through the whole thing. That was Frank and Matt. I know they both listened to it, the whole thing from beginning to end. Because they told me they did, and I believe it because of you, the beginning part, all the way up to the last 10 seconds or so, probably maybe 30 seconds, was basically describing how to do the refits properly. And then the latter part of the video was purely about, okay, I'll show you the results of it and compare it between what's currently out there and what the fix is, and see what the difference, show this is what the differences are. One of the issues for the general units was that because the way the refits were being done, because it was called a race-based empire, whatever. I still call it race-based in the client, and so then for Eugene.
Fine.
Legacy code is legacy code.
Right. So anyway, the refit name is the race. You know, and if when you do race-based refits, well, there's a feature that's part of it, which is if you add slash to it, then it can be a refit on top of the race-based refit, which is great because then you can just. And then what happens is when you choose that race, and when you're adding the ship, you'll see, oh, the race is bomb, whatever. And then the additional refits that are available for that race are dun dun dun. I always think it's kind of cool. But also, it makes sure that when the race is selected for that unit is the proper race, so that when you launch a plasma, launch a drone, launch a shuttle, it will use that race as for creating the counters to create the units. So it should have the proper counter for that unit. So, and if you don't, then it's, what happens if the race doesn't exist? It might not show up anything at all. And that was what's happening with some of those race-based refits, where it wasn't just the race, it was also race and refit, the full refit for that race. And it was called that without the slash, and therefore I kept on getting bugs from people going, hey, it won't launch drones, and it's from this base. And I go back and I find out, okay, what happened was that it was a race. The problem is that battle station and the refit that it was selected was wrong. It was not created properly. This got me frustrated. So anyway, I'm going to ease back on that, because otherwise I'm just going to be repeating the same podcast I just had 2 weeks ago.
Well, I was
halfway there.
Of something that there's only the briefest, the briefest little glancing blow of in the tournament. And have you ever dealt with a small squadron affair, maybe with fighters, maybe with PS, where you're dealing with electronic warfare?
It's been a while.
Do many people out there find that fun? Personally, I find that the way the system currently works is all it really does is it slows battle speeds down. Because it's yet another thing to spend power on.
Right. Oh, agreed. I totally agree there. For small squadron battles, yes. But for the larger fleet battles, EW is one of those really critical parts of it, especially when you are dealing with fighters and PFs.
Or cracking a starbase.
Or you're cracking a starbase. Yep.
Yeah.
In that you need that offset. You need that ability to help, especially for one of the attritional units, to survive.
Those dice really do make the difference between life and death sometimes.
Yes, it does. Oh, I agree there, Dave. Dave just mentioned that we haven't had a guest for actually quite a few years now. Steve Cole hasn't stopped by, though he did stop by for our anniversary show, which is many, many years ago now past. What was my 10-year anniversary or something like that? Yeah,
I think the biggest problem with getting one of the ADB folks on is that Steve Cole doesn't let him out of the mines that often to see the light of day, let alone get on podcasts.
That is true. That is true.
Just joking, Steve.
Understood. But yeah, with ADB, the biggest issue currently for getting someone from ADB on is, unlike the past years, because we've actually had ADB on a few times, including one of the times was we actually, when they had the miniatures out, and they actually got some of the miniatures, the guy, call them sculptors, that created the miniatures. We had them on, which was cool, because we had like ADB, and then we had like two or three of the sculptors on. You know, that they used the tools, different kinds of tools to create the models, which then would be put towards Shapeways, and it's been a while for that. But and the great thing for when it comes to that was that we actually were able to talk. Okay, we asked them, okay, what are the tools that you use to create these models? You know, and kind of good discussion. And this was early on when we first got into Shapeways, and we were able to get that together, which was fantastic. I think that was a really good show. Obviously, there was one show that I had which wasn't ADB. It was, no, it wasn't Daniel Cast. It was the guy who did Call to Arms.
Okay.
And he was in the UK. And I brought him in on Skype. It was, I think that was... Oh. Yeah, I think I had to do a special time for him. So, yeah, I think I did it on a Saturday when I did that interview. And to say the very least, it's been a long, long time since that one. I would actually love to bring in Daniel Cast. Because as if everybody here knows, I'm assuming you guys realize this, and I know anyone who's listened to the podcast long enough knows, which is I really like Starmada. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Cast is the creator of Starmada. And the feeling I get from the posts he does and so forth, he's like me in that his gaming company is his passion project. The one that he gets to do what he wants to do. But he also has a day job, which keeps the food on the table. You know, because he unfortunately, he doesn't. His games don't sell as well as
passion's great, Warhammer. But staying fed's better.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Understood.
You got to keep the lights on if you want to run the computer.
Well, agreed. And Lord knows, when it comes to SFB Online and Starfleet Warlord. There have been, so far, at least twice in the past, 10 years that I've thought about it. Say, okay, should I just walk away? Shut it all down and just walk away? You know? Fortunately, the answer has been no, because to me, it's just been an ingrained part of my life. You know, it's been part of my life so long, it'd be like leaving my child. That kind of thing.
So, I hear you.
Yep. But yeah, getting back to non tournament. That is one thing that I'm hoping that I'm doing right when it comes to the client, which is I'm hoping that the client enables and helps people to play these, the non-tournament games, not huge battles. I don't think anyone's ever tried a huge battle.
You'd have to define where you'd point huge battle at.
Agreed.
People that just play the tournament might think that a 600 point squadron fight is huge. Whereas some people would turn around and go, it doesn't get huge until both people have two carrier groups, a dreadnought, and a full command roster.
No, to me, a huge battle is somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 BPV between those two sides. That'd be huge. Which, that's a lot, because That's a carrier force. Operation. And
have you ever all done the accoutrements. Exactly...
All the drones.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, have you ever done any studies on exactly when the client starts breaking down due to the weight of all of the things it has to administer? Drones, fighters, points of turn, points of slip, counters, and associated fluff.
Not a complete stress test.
Right. I've never done a stress test on it. Cause to me, that's one of those things that I would want to. Fortunately, it's a Java-based client. This also can be bad because of the Java-based client does something which can be, it's great in some respects, bad in other respects. that is Java puts you put a limit on how much memory you're going to let this program take up. That's can be great for if you're running this with other programs. So at some point it won't, you know, it will exceed that. It won't take up all your memory. Now the problem is with that is that if what's running in that Java program gets too much, there's too many things in it, then it, what it does is it will their CPU usage will spike because it's always trying to free up memory to allocate the more things that are in it and so forth. It can get kind of nasty, but I've got it set to the point where it has a minimum like most Java programs do and has a maximum. The maximum is pretty good. At least I feel like it's set to a decent size, and I have not heard anyone complain so far that they're running into issues with larger battles yet. Obviously, as I just said, I have not actually stress tested it to see how much each one will take up. Because
if it's not an industry secret, how much data gets exchanged from the client to the server every tick?
Every tick?
Well, doesn't the system basically work on a modified IRC client?
Yeah. Now
I'm just curious what the the byte limit is per tick.
Oh. I'm not sure what you mean by per tick.
Well, per iteration, per message.
Per message. Well, actually it's not much. It depends on what you're doing. It is, as you know, it is a modified IRC server. The one thing that I did modify many, many years ago, and I know I've talked about it, which is that previously the IRC server was basically a router. It was what used to route the messages between the different clients. And everything that was stored locally in the clients. Nothing stored on the server. It's just a router. That's all it was used for. But one thing I did many years ago now, which was I changed it so that to cut back on the amount of traffic required by each person, it's a modified IRC client, which actually stores those, like the units that are part of the game are now stored on the IRC server. It doesn't actually understand that, you know, what it is. It just knows it's a blob that's stored up there with different attributes.
I was just curious. You mentioned how the sausage is made. I was just a little curious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. And that what that does is previously when you had a person join a room that was in the middle of play, what would happen previously before I added that feature, it would ask for, hey, give me your units. So each person's units would then have to be sent to the server and then sent out to everybody. Because it's a router. It's a dumb router.
Yeah, that sounds like that'd be a pain.
Well, the biggest issue was the people playing, those were the people that their bandwidth is what would be taken up. Because it's every time someone came in, they'd have to send all their units. And so forth. And
the system had probably bogged down until the transfer was done.
Right. And actually, I'm not sure. I think I might have removed it. Previously, I actually had a counter which showed how many backlog bytes it had because it would queue it up. You know, and I think I removed it because I had it that way when you actually, some people had some really slow connections, like dial-up speeds. Because in theory, you could actually use the let's be online client over dial-up. It will work.
Well, I knew that.
It's kind of slow. And obviously, all depends upon, strange as it might sound now, all depends on the size of the ship. Because the more boxes you have, these days, that's not quite the case anymore. Previously, it was the case. It's not nearly the case what it was. Because of the third gen devs are narrowed down in that they just, for each box, you have, like in the case of your engines, like your left engine, that's just one little object saying, okay, it's this number of boxes of part that are left warp. Previously, each box was its own little object. So it would be like the larger ships would be really large versus the smaller ships. So that's definitely, with the third generation definition, that helps out a lot there. So a lot less memory is taken up with the third gen definitions, which is nice. And obviously it will speed things up too. Now,
I can see that.
I still have a project which I've partially completed. Still things I have to add, some features I have to add to it, which is changing it from IRC to being a HTTP-based server. And the reason why I wanted to do that was just because of, in some cases, now I've not heard complaints about this for a while. In some cases, because it was IRC using the standard IRC ports, those were being blocked by ISPs because the only thing that usually used IRC was bots.
Well, that and other dark web nasties.
Right, exactly. They would use that for communicating with little bots that were installed on your little agents that were installed on your computers, and they would communicate via the IRC server, and say they would start blocking.
IRC is so dead simple.
Right.
It's easy to leverage.
Right. Exactly. And some of them don't like that. But I haven't heard anything for a while from that part. The curling, the one thing people want, I've seen, and I've wanted to do, but it's like I have to rewrite the whole client all over again. And it's, I'm not sure I actually have time. Which is, have it so you can have it on an iPad, on a tablet.
Well, hang on a second. Just spitballing here. If you transition away from IRC to hypertext tunneling protocol calls, then what would stop you from turning the client, from authoring a version of the client that works as a smart web app?
Yeah, that was the one thing, because I did do some.
Is at that point, as long as it was browser compliant, you could run it on anything that could run a relevant browser.
Right. And I actually did do some work on that too. I got the board done. I forget what parts I got done when it comes to having a web-based client. Because obviously the big thing about that, the good thing about a web-based client, I mean purely web-based, as in, in the browser, using the browser's UI, as I call it. I don't have to worry about any antivirus stuff. I don't have to worry about, oh, you need to have this signed. You have to have approvals, here, that kind of thing. I just have to worry about Steve Cole shutting me down. But we're good. We're good. No problems with that. I don't want anyone to worry about that, And as I mentioned before, many years ago, at this point, I probably mentioned it last. I know I last mentioned it kind of last year, But I did talk to Steve Cole a while back because of he's getting old, I'm getting old. The whole nastiness called death, you know, it comes up. And he already, you know, confirmed with me that, you know, in the case of his death, don't worry about it, everything's good. Because I'm just imagining that ADB goes away, and then the original licensor holder, Paramount, or whoever has bought Paramount, is going to go, no, goodbye. Either shut down or we sue you. That's like, oh. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, well, getting into licensing is probably not good for viewership either.
Oh, agreed. And if this was many years ago, I'll admit, but I can't imagine them changing their ways. Obviously, which was back, everyone remembers, what's the one game that was based off of SFB? Starfleet Command. That was it.
Yeah.
One and two.
Yeah, you guys can't do that because we don't want that out there.
Right. Well, they actually, the last version of the game, they actually licensed it from Paramount. Paramount didn't.
Yeah. As I recall from years and years and years ago, when Interplay got started, what they did was they went to Paramount first. And then, okay, we've got the rights to make a computer game. Why are we reinventing this? Somebody said, well, why don't we call ADB? Because they've got a game engine that we could probably easily code into the back end of this. And so it was a third party that licensed separately from both halves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as I recall, Interplay went to Paramount first.
Well, that's because they're the main rights holders for...
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Yeah, and it would, you know, and it makes perfect sense too, because if you can't get the rights to from Paramount, then there's no reason to even talk to ADB.
Yeah, yeah.
And that plus, the average person out there has never heard of Starfleet Battles or ADB.
Well,
comparatively speaking.
True. Just let note, Dave. Warehouse 23 still has ADB's PDFs. And so DriveThruRPG and Wargame Vault. All three still have ADB's PDFs. And the only thing that changed a year ago, which was Warehouse 23. They redid their interface, redid their store, and all. That was the big change. So if you bought something from Warehouse 23, you kind of had to... I forgot what you had to do, but... If you had a Warehouse 23 account, you would have been notified about the change and what you needed to do. So as long as you did something, I only say that because unfortunately I deal with some developers at my day job, and I'll tell them that they need to do something, and then I assume they've done it, and then a month later I find out, oh, you know, this is broken. And it's like, yeah. And if you would have followed the instruction they gave you a month ago, it wouldn't be broken. Probably it's like, what I do is I say, did you read my email? Oh, let me go check.
No, it went in the spam folder because you kept telling me all these emails that this feature that I count on as being sunset, and I didn't like it, so I just spammed you. I've dealt with some devs too.
Effort.
Yeah.
I would have fixed it, but it would have taken effort.
Agreed. But yeah, getting back to what we were discussing. Sorry, I felt like I needed to respond to Dave. This is what happens, you know. Unfortunately, the NFL is, you know, we're into playoff season now, and we'll just have to wait and see if the Ravens beat the Bills. You know? Anyhow. You know, And the thing is, with the Starfleet Command, is that they weren't making enough for Paramount, and Paramount went, okay, bink, and they yanked the license because they weren't getting a big enough return. I was like, really? You're really going to do that? You know, if you're going to pure... Because that was part of the contract, of the licensing agreement, which is that if we feel like you're not doing a good enough job of selling our, you know, our IP to people, we will pull the license. And that's what they did.
And then they gave it to somebody else who came out with Starfleet Command 3, which was a total flop.
Yep.
Not the least of which, because it didn't use any of the back end game balancing that was in the previous two.
Yep.
Adventures and Business Paramount's Missteps,
yep.
2025 edition.
Yeah. people in suits.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me of a funny thing, which was there's a podcast I listen to called Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. Love the guy. And last week he had a podcast on basically economic failures. There's a museum in Scotland that has this, and there's a guy who's kind of the keeper of these failures. And the one thing that really caught me off guard, which was the whole idea that economics and how the whole system works is not a machine. It is an organism. In that you can't, things are very much organic in basis. In other words, a lot of people are like, oh, the economy's not working, you know, doing these certain policies. Oh, you just got to work harder. You have to do it more, not less, you know, or change your policies. No, it's like, no.
No. It's failing because you didn't follow my instructions. My right. instructions are perfect. If you followed my instructions and everybody did it my way, it would be economic success beyond everybody's dreams.
Right. Exactly.
But then again, nobody has the ego to step aside and actually listen to the market very often.
Exactly. And part of that is that, at least the way I feel about it, is that we're organic, you know. And that was part of his take on economics, which was that, as I said, it's more organic. It's not just a machine that you can pull leaves and so forth. And in some cases, the failures were due plainly because of there are certain parts of it that they were really complicated to really think about how that would affect things, and so they said, okay, we're just not going to look at that because it's just too complicated. Well, it's going to affect the economy. You have to at least try. You know.
Well, here's the issue. People are idiots. You're welcome.
Okay.
We are the most intelligent idiots on the planet, basically.
That is true.
And the problem is that we get expectations that are not always grounded in the reality of where does thing X, Y, and Z come from? Where does it go? How does it work? Why does it exist? Why do things exist the way they do? And what are the consequences of change or doing something differently?
Mm-hmm.
you know, we don't always put all the things together properly, you know, and
That's a mouthful.
Everything evolves to a certain point where you were saying like it's or organisms and you think it's an organism. Yeah, that's closer to it than the machine aspect of it. And the problem is we try to pigeonhole everything into, you know, its own little box and say, I expect result X for input Y, and I don't understand why we're not getting the result that we got the first time around or that we predicted. You know, and that's kind of basically it.
Yeah.
The people that are successful are the ones that are doing something that is adapted into its niche or evolving into something that people need. And the ones that are failing are the ones that are totally out of touch and don't have a clue.
There's a reason there's not much in the way of passenger railroad service in the United States anymore. It's because the railroad barons refuse to innovate. And even though it is a more economically viable method of transportation and arguably somewhat easier on the environment, they're still not doing much more than shipping containers at this point.
Yeah.
Well, the flip side of all this is that it's on an individual basis, which is more convenient. You know, me walking out to a bus stop or 10 blocks to a train station, if I'm lucky enough to be close to one,
right,
or half a day of walking to a train station to take a train from one part of the country to the other, or getting on my moped or my car in my car and going directly there immediately.
I don't know. Sometimes I think it'd be fun to do something like get on the train in Los Angeles and ride it all the way to Chicago with a big party room and set the Starfleet battle stuff out and try to play a wedding cake out before we get to Chicago.
And that's a
might even be enough time.
The reason it doesn't exist like that is because it's a massively first world convenience. It would be fun but it would be more practical to go to the airport, hop on a plane, go there, and set it up there and do it there.
That's true. Very, very true. I just, in my line, I very rarely see warehouses anymore that have rail access. And I used to see it. When I started driving, I saw it more than I see it now. But even then, very, very few places even still had rails on the railroad access up to their warehouse. It was just an artifact of an earlier era. And the thing about it is that the railroads refused to negotiate, they refused to compromise, and they refused to innovate. And they just decided to rest on their laurels. And what ended up was, until about the 1980s, they had nothing to really threaten them. Because what happened in the late 70s and the early 80s was, as trucking got deregulated, and suddenly there was a viable alternative. Like a lot of things. Sometimes it's the competition that really, really brings the change. Okay, that's quite far enough a tangent for this group. Sorry about that, guys. That's just fine. A part of my line. So just excuse me for
you are for
that, that, next is, that is fine because here's the funny thing. You talk about that just for giggles, because to be honest, I hate to fly. I actually, when I was going to go out seeing my daughter in Denver, I looked up, just for giggles, going from Philadelphia, because I know that they have a major train, you know, right there in Philadelphia, the 30th Street Station, going from there to Denver via rail. And you can do it.
What is it? Three different trains?
Probably it takes like 2 days. It takes 48 hours. And I'm willing to bet a lot of that is because of you take one train out to Chicago,
Yeah.
You have a layover, and then you have to take another, like you have to take multiple trains and possibly, and I think also multiple layovers because of the trains aren't connected this, to have it so you can just go like planes where you're gonna go from one plane to another plane, and it's only like maybe a 4 hour layover or something
Yeah,
like that.
the train from Philadelphia to Chicago only runs three or four times a week, and the one from Chicago to LA, which runs through Denver, the Chicago, the California Zephyr, supposed to be a really pretty run, by the way, but it only runs twice a week at this point. There was a time when I got on the Amtrak in Little Rock, and I rode the train all the way out to California. For a trip, and that was something, that was a fun experience.
Cause I'm sure. See, the one thing that would be for me would be great when it comes to taking the train is just looking outside the train as the world went by, because I'm sure you'd have some beautiful vistas
Oh yeah.
and view.
Oh yeah. Unfortunately, depending on which scheduled run you get on, either you hit the pretty parts in the dark when you can't see anything, and in the daytime all you see is scrubland, or which happens anyway. But no, the real issue, the real benefit of the rail travel is that the seats are two to a bank in the cabin. They are wider than modern first class seats. They have leg supports. They recline fully, and they are absolutely comfortable to sit in for the length of time you're going to be in them. In addition to that, you've got more room between you and the rank of seats ahead of you, enough so that when the train gets to a certain position, sometimes they turn the things around. Rather than turn the car around, they'll just flip the seats around.
Yeah,
Not.
I've never been in those cabs. I've only ones I've taken are the ones that run the Northeast Corridor from what Boston
Oh, okay.
all the way down to Washington. I've never the farthest I've gone north on a train was New York City.
Yeah,
And
you're still in the single level commuter
right,
Accela lines.
exactly. Yeah, because we actually did that for my job, is that we were going up to Great Plains, New York. And so we took the train from Philadelphia to New York and then took another, I think, a local line from New York City out to Great Plains. Because we were meeting up with a company which we were acquiring. We needed to discuss things out there, so that's how we got there. We didn't drive, we didn't take a plane, we took the train. I was happy to do that. And of course, since
I bet it was a lot of fun.
I went to Drexel University in Philadelphia, which is like 5 blocks from 30th Street Station, I invariably I'd walk there. And I would go home every single month. I'd take the train from Philadelphia down to Baltimore. And then my parents would pick me up at Penn Station in Baltimore, which, again, it was always nice. Course, the tough part about that is that you can't bring as much stuff with you, but
No, you really can't.
which is fine, which is overall fine. But
You
anyway.
know, kind of funny talking about all the rail fan stuff. I remember years and years ago, Battle Group Little Rock, after one particularly long session, that I don't even remember what we did that day. Somebody showed up with a box of Eurorails. Ever
Oh,
heard of Eurorails?
yes.
What a fun game to teach to pick up and play. I mean, it's one of those games where you've got a map, and you're given a crayon in the color of your right. token, and you actually draw your trails out, your train tracks out on the map.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Great little map. Great little fun.
I remember that. Actually, I remember seeing it also at Origin. I saw some people playing that.
It's like Euro Rails was the second one. I think the original one was called Empire Builder. And that was based on the United States. And then they've got one for Australia, and they've got a sci-fi version for the moon. It's like all kinds of fun things.
Mm-hmm.
It just always amazed me how much crossover there was from Starfleet Battles guys and rail fans.
What surprised me, both engineer type kind of people.
Yeah, there is that. There is that.
Wow. I brought it up real quick. 1990. Wow. That's when it came out. Your Rails came out, it was 1990. Brought it up in Board Game Geek just to see. Mm-hmm. To see it, and
boy, that was a special time, wasn't it? All the new games coming out, all the old games getting really good before the computers really destroyed everything.
Oh, they haven't destroyed everything yet.
Oh, I know. I'm just being pedantic.
Just wait till AI takes over.
Yeah, well, when AI turns around and writes Commodore's edition, yeah, I'm done.
Are you kidding me?
I hope not.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm going down the rabbit hole. You did this to me, Jeff. You did this to me.
I'll take the blame. I derailed the podcast.
Yes. Woo-hoo. Yes, you did.
Or should I say, choo-choo.
And really, Jeff, here's the one thing. I'm sure I mentioned it, but I'll just reiterate it anyway, which is for the past 15, maybe 20 years, I live within a mile of a railroad track. And I'm constantly hearing the trains go back and forth, and obviously they're the only ones I see are cargo.
Yep. There's only a select few rail lines that Amtrak runs on.
Yep. Actually, the funny part was that the other day I saw a train which I've never seen before, in that it had a engine at the front of the train and an engine in the middle of the train. Which to me was, I've never seen that before. I'm used to that. Okay, if the extremely long train, which is, you can tell just by watch this, see how many engines are there? Is there one?
New rules. It's a couple of things that could be. First off, there's new rules based on the maximum length of rail car between air pressure sources. So it could be they've got the engine in the middle to be a boost pump for the air brakes for the end of the train.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be that it's being used as a separator while the engine itself is being relocated to some other part of the rail network.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got too much hazmat of a particular category, you have to have a brake before you can have any more of it. This is so that if you have a really bad derailment, you don't have something as bad as the gasoline train derailment of, oh gosh, happened in the 90s down in Los Angeles, where there was a literal firestorm for 3.5 days until all the volatiles cooked off. I mean, it was a huge, it was like 140 plus car derailment. It was ugly. I mean, they were talking at one point that it was raining gasoline on houses in the neighborhood next to the rail tracks.
Damn.
Wow.
I'd be concerned for my house. No one lit a match.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is that there's a lot of different reasons why they would they'd put a train in the middle. Sometimes what they'll do is if they've got one engine pulling 30 or 40 cars and they've got another engine pulling 30 or 40 cars, and for some reason they have a crew failure because the crew's timed out or something else has happened, they'll come in and they'll use the first train to rescue the second train, and it'll leave the locomotive in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. there's a lot of goofy stuff like that that goes into the rail business, and most of the stuff I know is just from having a family member that was in it in the 70s, retired from Union Pacific in 1982.
So. Yeah, if I really want to know more, there's a guy that I work with who actually, he worked for the train. I don't know which one of the train companies he worked for, but he knows his trains because the software that my group produces is logistics. And part of that, of course, is trains. But he knows a lot about that. Anyhow, I think we will end it there. Unfortunately, there's no trains in SFB. That would be it.
What, are we going to switch back to another topic now?
Oh. No, I can switch back. The topic just did a head.
Uh-huh. Agreed. I'll say it's getting late, but it kind of is. And it's kind of, it's already, I think it's pointless to bring up another subject, or even return to the previous subject. Before the things got really derailed.
So yeah. Basically, you're running out of steam.
It got robbed.
Yes.
Got
it. Yes. Exactly. So with that, Jeff, it's been wonderful having you around. Obviously.
Thanks.
Drive safely, because Lord knows with it being winter out, there's the whole nastiness called snow.
I'd rather deal with the snow than the loose nuts behind the steering wheels.
Understood.
As long as it's snow, I'm fine. If it's sleet, okay. But if it's freezing rain, I'm done.
Yeah. Oh, amen. Amen. Oh, amen there. Okay. Well, you take care and you have a good night.
I'll do that. Good night, everybody. Okay.
Doug.
Hey, plug. Gamers a winner. Coming up.
Yep.
Coming up soon.
Yep.
I mean, hey, this would have been the weekend for it years ago, but it's not.
Yeah.
And yay! but it's coming up on President's Day weekend.
Yep.
And that's only a month away. We are like slightly over 4 weeks from it.
Crap. I have to do some reading.
Yeah. So there's
a lot of arms because as I said, I figured that's the way doing call to arms at gamers will force me to actually do that. Oh, by the way, I found out gamersofwinter.com and gamersofsummer.com were both available.
Okay.
They're no longer available because I bought them.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Yeah, I need to
talk about that later.
Yeah, I need to work on to see if I'm not sure how much of your stuff has direct links to the .net. Because if it doesn't have a lot of links to .net explicitly on the website, in theory, I could just have so that the .com resolves to the same address as yours, though. That probably won't work. I just realized. Because you're probably on a server which is based off a certain domain. So, I'd have to talk to you. Because in theory, that as long as your hosting provider, you can give two names to two domains to the same server, you should be able to do that.
Okay. We can talk about that later this week.
Yeah.
You want to give me a call?
Yep. I should have some time definitely Monday because Monday is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. It's a federal holiday, so my work is closed.
But,
I should have some time day.
Anyhow. Nice Monday holiday there now. Yep. Oh, also, we may not have that particular Euro game at Gamers of Winter, but it's along the lines of stuff that a lot of people bring.
Right.
So if there are people listening to this podcast who know people who or who like to play games other than SFP, let them know about it, especially if they're on the East Coast and fairly local.
Yep.
You know, yep. Harrisburg, PA is a kind of a hub. It's basically about as good as Lancaster if you're, you know, on the East Coast looking for a place to reach.
Yep. So, yep.
Gar. Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. Okay. So, we'll wrap it up there. We got discussing a little bit about SFB fleets, small, tiny discussion. Obviously, I went back to 2 weeks ago, and forgive me for basically repeating a good bit of that. And obviously, that's one thing, as Doug pointed out, that I should do definitely not tonight, but probably this weekend, just log into the account and go check the metrics on that video. Because as I said, I was surprised how many people actually watched that video, which to me is like, seeing more than like 10 is a shock. Now, obviously, depends upon how they play the game. Because what was it? I think it was like Facebook. If somebody watched like 5 seconds of a 3-minute video, it was considered watched. Like, no, that's not watched. That's viewing, maybe? Whatever. It's not what they claim it is. Like, it's jury-rigging the stats so that it looks like people are watching more videos than they are, basically. But anyhow, with that, I know Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.